nice to be here. I always recall the fact that some famous man once said, if you reach the end of your career and you can name the friends on the fingers of your two hands, you've lived well. I think I know most of you here, and I feel you're my friends, so I think I beat time. We came down here in 1919, and within a few months' time, a young lady arrived into the household. Some less than 2 years later, a young man followed her. From her, she got his nickname. This was her baby brother, and the best she could say was Buddy, and it stuck. He made his entrance into the world rather well padded. And for the first few months, I think most of the time was devoted when he was awake to yelling. Until finally his mother in desperation asked if I thought it would risk his life if she fed him a second bottle. I said, no, I think the only thing was run over. She tried 12 ounces and he ate it all and stuck out like a potter pigeon and he's cooing ever since. I think he's always done well as his father has in eating ever since. Evidently, it must be a trait of the family. My grandfather, as many of you read today, came down here in 1874, built an old ranch house out here that now is well cared for by Casey Reno. We had the pleasure last year of going through that house and seeing some of the old events that are there. Casey gave us the knob off of a door, which was famous for several things. One was I was born in that room, and one was he was born in that room. And Bud has one on his desk, and I have one on my desk at home. We cherish him a great deal. Memories of California and Tulare. It's nice to be here. They say a good talker stops before he's run out. I'll quit. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. We're swapping some stories, and we'll tell a few of you individually. You know, I was telling him when we first came out from Iowa in 1909, I was young and wanted to be with my parents at the time, but I was so glad they got a one-way ticket from Iowa and brought me to the promised land. We landed over there in Lindsay. But I remember at that time my dad had a big car called a Pope Hartford, and the doctor remembered that great big model at that time. And our idea of a wonderful Sunday afternoon was to get in that car and drive over to Tulare and have a picnic lunch in that little grassy spot in front of the hotel. And that was up front of the depot, pardon me, and that was pretty thrilling. And one time the car broke down just opposite Heffel Fingers Hawk Farm. This we'll never forget. So it's fun to get old enough to reminisce and have other people in that same age bracket. As you know, I travel around singing the song of America on the happy side and on the positive side, because I'm not afraid of tomorrow, because I've seen so much of yesterday. But wasn't too long ago, my wife said one day, said, Dad, I've known you for 46 years. I've never known you to be unhappy. Now come clean. Don't you get pessimistic once in a while? I said, at our age? She says, you know my definition of a pessimist. I said, no, I guess I don't. She said, it could be someone who has to live with a stupid optimist. Well, I'm not a stupid optimist. I'm a hard-headed optimist. The more history I read, the more exciting it is to be alive. I think it's a wonderful time to be alive, providing you are. We're celebrating the 100th anniversary of the city of Tulare here. And this is great, and I like that. And I hope many of you will make it for the sesquicentennial. Now, that's just 50 years from now. Some of you will make it. I hope I do, too. Because I enjoy this business of being alive, alert, and aware of the times in which I live. I think that to get a group like this together and visit like you've been visiting, not only in the other room, but here, too, it's what it's all about. This is what America is all about. At the community level, where we know everyone and like them anyhow, This is where we're going to build the new tomorrow. In the 20s, when I was in the banking business over there in Lindsay, I knew everybody. I knew who they married, and most of the time I knew why. So I volunteered for all the war bond drives and all of the Red Cross drives as chairman because I knew where the money was and I had so much on so many. I could get the best committee together you ever saw. And you can only do it on lovely communities of this size. And I think this is what makes Tulare County unique and wonderful, because in Kern County, they're dominated by one big city, and Fresno County by one big city, and you go down the line, and this is pretty true. But we've divided it up so beautifully here in Tulare County, and I like that, and I'm glad I live here. And the more I travel around this country and the world, the more thrilled I am to be here in the Garden of the Sun in this area, and I'm sure you're glad too. This is the promised land, whether you recognize it or not. This is the promised land. We don't live longer in Tulare County. People say it seems longer, but we have more fun, don't we? Well, as Dr. Zumwalt said, when a man's through, he should be willing to sit down. I'm coming in for a landing. I love this man. He's just tremendous. I like to go on a hunting trip or something with him around the campfire. I bet you we could have a lot of fun. I know lots of stories I didn't tell you, Doctor. I tried out some on him for size. He thought they were all right. Now the piece de resistance here this evening, a local boy who's surely made good, has he ever, to a point where the whole country claim him, the state claims him, the county claims him, and above all, you can claim him here tonight. So we want to hear from the Admiral here tonight. He was the youngest officer ever for a retired Admiral, the youngest Vice Admiral, the youngest four-star. He was the youngest guy that they ever had all the way up. The youngest chief of naval operations. But he's got a problem coming up because they're going to take girls into the Navy. And he's going to need Dad with him. Because if you get the girls in with those gobs and they've been out for several months, you're going to have a lot of little goblets. So I'm happy to introduce the Admiral while he's still with us.
What a wonderful, wonderful birthday party. I'm certainly glad I continued the practice which my daddy taught me in the cradle of having two bottles before I came. You know, in the military, as a matter of fact, in government service at large, it's against the law to get involved in politics, and therefore this Matthias button that I'm wearing should in no sense be construed as being politicking. I'm just wearing it because I'm back home helping to celebrate with a hometown boy. However, while I'm on the subject of Matthias, I would like to report to you about a recent trip that we took to Paris together. Fortunately, neither of our wives are here tonight. Musa happens to be sick and sends her deep regrets for not being able to be here. But on this particular occasion, I was working as a military man does, and Bob was along. After some 3 or 4 days of very hard work on my part, it suddenly dawned on me that tomorrow was Sunday, and I said, "Bob, we'll go to church tomorrow." He said, "Fine." But when we woke up, it was raining, and Bob said, "I can't make it. I've lost my raincoat." I said, "No, Bob, you got to come along. You've been playing pretty hard." So he grumbled and got in the car and went with me. And the preacher that particular day in the little church for the American community took as his lesson the Ten Commandments. And when he got to "Thou shalt not commit adultery," Bob got up and started to leave. And I grabbed him by the coat and said, "Where are you going?" He said, "I just remembered where I left my raincoat." I want to say to you here and now that a vote for Bob Mathias is a vote for the 9 commandments. I was delighted that our master of ceremonies was so forthcoming in all he had to say. You know, he's been, we're all quite aware of the meaning of this signal piece. But all night, as I've been looking at him, he's been going like this. And I finally asked him as I walked over to cut the cake what he meant, and he said, "A little piece on the side." Pleased that the subject of our women in the Navy has been brought up, because I wanted to brag to you a little bit about the fact that the Navy has, as you may know, recently had the honor of selecting for the first time in history a lady to be an admiral, the first time we've ever had a lady admiral. And some of you may have observed that my picture was taken kissing her on the cheek as she was awarded her 2 stars. Shortly thereafter, I received a letter from Don Hillman, which said, "Bud is an old naval officer and longtime friend. I never thought I'd live to see the day when the chief of naval operations was kissing an admiral." I wrote back and I said, "Dear Don, you should be aware of the fact that I wouldn't be where I am today if I hadn't been kissing admirals all my life." I've been asked to speak for just a few minutes about what Tulare means to me. My family, as you know from having listened to Dad, has had 5 generations of experience here, going back to my great-grandfather and continuing through my own firstborn son who was born here. To me, Tulare stands for the very roots of America. I think, as I look here about me, of the wonderful family love and love of friends within which I grew up. The names are too numerous to mention. 3 Hillmans, 3 Hesseys, 1 Sturgeon, 1 awful big tough sturgeon on the football field, 1 Luton, 1 John Paul Jones, three Cardozes, one Munger, three names that I still recall by their maiden names, although they've been married nearly 30 years, Betty Warren, Patsy Rawson, Margaret Sampson. To me, Tulare stands for all the fun of a young kid in a small town, stealing peaches with Don Hillman, selling them at far too small a profit, driving a tractor for 25 cents an hour for Brooks Gist for 12 hours a day. Tonight, I've just solicited a job from his young brother, Tom, and I've told him that my price has gone up to 35 cents an hour. He told me, based on Brooks's recommendation, he wasn't sure I was worth it, but since we're cousins, he'd try me out. This small town is symptomatic and symbolic of the towns that represent pretty close to a majority of our population throughout this United States. And as it celebrates its 100th centennial, I think that it's important for us to take note of the fact that within this centennial period, we appear to be coming to the end of the longest and most unpopular war in our history, and we appear to have been able to held on long enough and to have shown sufficient toughness of social fiber that Hanoi is willing to make terms respectable to the honor of the United States and to the salvation of millions of people in South Vietnam who would otherwise have been destroyed, and thereby protect our reputation around the world as an ally of integrity for all that means for us in terms of our own well-being as a nation which has friends which trust us and therefore is more powerful than it would otherwise be. And I think as we look upon the prospect of the return of our gallant prisoners of war and those who are maimed and those who will not return but whose memory we must honor, we have to ask ourselves the question whether the roots of America for which this nation has stood during its first 100 years can continue. The price that we have paid for this war's end is a fearsome one indeed. We have, during the 7 years of its duration, seen our strategic nuclear superiority vanish. And under the tremendous momentum of the Soviet Union's strategic building program, as we spent close to $200 billion to fight that war, we have had to get the very best deal we could get, one which I support, the SALT I, which has resulted in parity between the Soviet Union, over which we have in the past had strategic superiority. And we have in the conventional field paid a fearsome price. During the 7 years of this war, while it was being fought during the first 4 years on a business as usual basis, your military services were paying fantastic taxes for that war. The Navy's tax was the reduction of 37% of its ships, 20% of its aircraft, 10% of its military personnel in comparing the pre-war year with the post-war year. And as a result of the tremendous domestic dissension created by this war, the elected representatives of the people in the Congress of the United States, notwithstanding the tremendous support from individuals such as Bob Mathias, in resisting the catastrophic cuts that would be proposed by others of $20, $25, and $30 billion, has been forced to compromise on reductions in the president's defense budget of $2 billion in fiscal year 71, $3 billion in fiscal year 72, and $5 billion in the appropriations bill for fiscal year 73 just completed. During that same period of time, in addition to its fantastic strategic building program, the Soviet Union has proceeded to build more ships, merchant ships, major and minor combatant ships, than your United States Navy has built. It has built a greater number of tons than your United States Navy has built. During this past 4 years, we have observed what I think is one of the most fantastic performances on the part of a nation in trouble, which history has to tell about. With people dissenting, with a strong minority trying to rip us apart, it has been possible to maintain sufficient national will to remove over 500,000 soldiers from South Vietnam, to train 1,100,000 Vietnamese to carry their own battle, to initiate a bridging of the 25-year chasm of philosophical differences with Peking, to sign a strategic arms limitation with the Soviet Union, which in turn led to the opportunity to bring about an economic pact so that they can begin to feed themselves under their very inefficient system. And finally, in the face of that triangularity created between Peking, Moscow, and Washington, both edges of which, in that isosceles triangle, enhanced the power potential of the United States, together with their desire to help us because of what they had to gain to bring about peace or the near prospect of it. And the single factor that has made it possible in the face of all this retrogression of power to bring this about is the twofold fact of the will of our people as reflected in thousands of small communities like this around the world, and the fact that we still retain superior military strength to the Soviet Union. But if present trends continue, it is absolutely inevitable that we will become inferior to the Soviet Union. By the 80s, 50% of our fuel must come in from overseas, 4/5 of it from the Persian Gulf. Already, 69 of the 72 critical materials come into this country from overseas. In the face of that superior maritime power which the Soviets are in the process of developing, their strategy can be the very simple one of waiting for us to continue to disarm ourselves, waiting for us to accelerate the disarmament of ourselves if we listen to certain voices in this land. And then, when that time has come, when their very conservative calculations indicate to them that they have a power potential greatly superior to ours, their act can be as peaceful as leaning on the oil-bearing states of the Middle East, which they will by then have penetrated, to shut off the flow of oil, or of insisting that they triple the price of it, or as slightly more aggressive as blockading the Persian Gulf. Ladies and gentlemen, that day does not need to come. I think that the strength of America throughout its thousands of communities similar to that of Tulare will see to it that it will not come, but it requires that all of us go back and remind ourselves of what it was that our forebears who founded this city came here for, and what it was they were willing to risk their lives in favor of, and to get out and shout to the rooftops that in the 100 years that remain ahead in the life of this city, a free and open society will find a way to survive against a closed dictatorship.
Very wonderful, in full and on time. God bless America and people like that and their attitudes and ideas and determination to keep this America of ours up there where it belongs. So through precept and example in the years ahead, we can be the world leaders I'm sure we were destined to be. Now, we have Steve Sullivan to call on. Steve, you have some presentations. If you haven't, this is wrong. He caught a couple plates. Chairman of the Centennial Committee, Steve Sullivan.
Terry, remember a few minutes ago you were asking if the Admiral was an uptight guy. I think you found out, didn't you?
Perfect.
I can't follow, I don't have the gift of elocution, is that the word? Or the gift of gab? That elocution? Okay. Whatever the word is that you fellows have. However, I mean, as Chairman of the Centennial Committee, we do want to make a couple presentations tonight. And I just don't quite know how to do this, because I want to present one to the fellow that used to be our family doctor, and the other that was a snot-nosed kid that was 4 years behind me in school. So, Dr. Zumo, a memento from the Centennial Committee. Yeah.
Admiral Zumo.
Thank you.
I think that's just about enough to say.
I've seen those, they're just very beautiful. I think that's just great. Are you ready to relax? Have some fun? It's the harvest season. That's supposed to be a fun time of year, isn't it? I like the harvest season. Even when I wasn't getting anything for the olives, just to get them off the trees, they were bothering me. Boys like the harvest season. It's the most dependable of all of the seasons, is the fall season. So we're here. And you know what we did, not only me being an alien from Paisa, they went all the way to Portaville for some of the programs. Following the introductions, I am to introduce the Portaville Medicine Show by the one and only Bill Rogers. Director will perform, backed by the Portaville Studio Band, directed by Buck Shaver. After this, just a minute, please. After the medicine show, Doc, I don't know whether you following this, we will need a cocktail and restroom break. They got that wrong. We'll need a restroom break and maybe another cocktail to allow the committee to rearrange the tables and make room for the dancing. Okay, are you ready? Where's Bill? Oh, he's on the end, man. Okay. Bill's Dick Shaper.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to say it's a pleasure to be here. This band last summer had the pleasure of helping Dodge City